Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to be drawing strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. This is episode 1.3, God in the Day-to-Day Discipline. The Bible passage for this episode is Proverbs 3, 1-12. I'll read it from the ESV, which is the English Standard Version. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. So you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof. For the Lord reproves him whom he loves, as a father the son in whom he delights. As an author, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I don't read a lot of books. When I was a teenager, I read all the time, mostly science fiction and fantasy. I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Isaac Asimov's Foundation series, the first two Dune books, both of which are huge, and a lot more. When I was reading in my room before dinner time, my mom used to have to come all the way upstairs into my room and yell at me to get me to come to dinner, because I simply didn't hear her when she called to me from downstairs. As an adult, though, I rarely read a full book. About a year ago, I heard that Robinson Crusoe is one of those books that you just have to read, so I bought it. I figured that I'd read it before I went to sleep, which is better than what I usually do, which is crossword puzzles on my phone. I agree that Robinson Crusoe is a classic. It's really good, but I'm still only halfway through it. I do read a full book occasionally. At the beginning of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men, I talk about how I read Kyle Eidelman's book, Not a Fan, and how that book changed my life. I was hooked from the beginning. Kyle, who's the lead pastor at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, starts the book by sharing how he was trying to figure out what to preach for the Easter Sunday services one year. I visited Southeast Christian once. It's massive. The sanctuary seats close to 10,000 people. So Kyle knew that on Easter Sunday, thousands of the people in attendance would be people who rarely attend church. What should he tell them? Well, what did Jesus say when he attracted a large crowd? He said things that drove most of the people away. Why? Jesus didn't want fans. He wanted followers. And being a real follower of Jesus is tough. It takes discipline. When I think of discipline, I think of athletes. The Apostle Paul did too. At the end of 1 Corinthians 9, he writes this. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air. But I discipline my body and keep it under control. The athletes that I discuss under discipline in 52 Weeks of Strength for Men are the members of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team. They were, for the most part, a collection of college players, and they were going to compete against the best national teams in the world. One of those teams from the Soviet Union had won the past four Olympic gold medals. A year before the 1980 Winter Olympics, the Soviet team played a three-game series against an NHL All-Star team that featured 20 future Hall of Famers. The Soviets won two of those three games, including a 6-0 rout in Game 3 at Madison Square Garden. U.S. head coach Herb Brooks knew that the only way his college kids would have a shot was for them to be a true team, one with cohesiveness, stamina, and toughness. The way to create such a team was through discipline. Lots and lots of discipline. So Brooks, ran them ragged at endless practices and in 63 exhibition games. "We may not be the best team, but we're going to be the best conditioned team," he told them frequently. After a lackluster showing at an exhibition game in Norway, Brooks wouldn't let the players into the locker room but ordered them back onto the ice for skate sprints that were called Herbies. One Herbie was blue line and back, red line and back, far blue line and back, and goal line and back. With Brooks yelling, "Again!" over and over, the team did Herbies for an hour. After that experience, the players never gave Brooks another lackluster performance. And by the time the team got to Lake Placid, it was the best conditioned team in the world. That conditioning made the team competitive, but it was not a guarantee of success, especially against the best team in the world. The Soviets were more skilled, they were proven winners, and they were just as disciplined as the Americans. Here's how the Soviet goalkeeper described his life as a member of the best hockey team on the planet.
"The life was intense, practically without family, children, or hobbies. It was only work."
Vladislav Tretiak grew up just outside of Moscow and became immersed in the Soviet sports machine at a young age. He developed into perhaps the greatest goaltender to ever play and starred on the Soviet national team for over 15 years.
"We lived in camps for 9 months out of the year. We trained, studied theory and practiced 3 times a day. It was a difficult and harsh life. I saw my wife and children rarely. But the thing is, I loved hockey very much. I thought that's the way it should be. And I was ready to sacrifice and put discipline ahead of everything in order to be first and for my team to win."
Just before the Olympics opened, the Soviet team beat the U.S. team 10-3 in an exhibition. But the Americans got another shot in the Olympic semis. Herb Brooks believed they could win. He just had to convince his players. Here's his pregame speech to his team, as captured in the film Miracle.
"Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world." You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
I'm pretty sure you know what happened next. The Miracle on Ice continues to inspire people today, more than 40 years after it happened. It's a shining example of how athletes who are disciplined give themselves a chance at success. But what does that have to do with you? You're not competing in the Olympics. No, your life is more important than that. When I read from 1 Corinthians 9 earlier, I left out a sentence. Let me read the first part of it again, with that sentence included. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. At the end of his life, when he was about to be executed, Paul wrote this: I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Jesus has plenty of fans. What he wants is followers, steadfast, disciplined followers. How's your training going? Maybe you need to get back on the end line. Again. Next week I'll talk about fatherhood. I hope you'll join me for that. Consider picking up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men as a resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.